You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ here. This is the final conference call podcast. So do two of these every year as we head up towards the draft. Do one before the combine, then one before the actual draft. It's really just me sitting in my home office with a bunch of reporters on Zoom, firing questions away on players, teams, fits, all that good stuff. So what we've done is we've condensed that down to about an hour or a little less than an hour here today. And we're going to kind of give you a little flavor of what's to come here with the draft with a lot of back and forth, some good questions that were lobbed my way and my answers. So without further ado, here's the conference call.
Next question comes from Sam Fortier with the Washington Post. Sam, you may ask a question.
Hey, DJ. Why is it that despite the time and resources teams have poured into evaluating quarterbacks, projecting them to the NFL remains a crapshoot, for lack of a better word? And do you think we've made progress in quarterback projection over the last 10, 15 years?
I think it would be hard to point to the results and say that we've made progress, as sad as that is. I think the more you look at it, I think that there's more attention being paid now to maybe more so the environment than the actual quarterback, and knowing, you know, how to set the table for when you do take the quarterback that he can be successful. I think that seems to be a conversation I have a lot with teams around the league is, okay, A, do we take him, and then do we put him out there right away? Do we have the infrastructure for him to survive and be successful? That seems to be a little bit more of the focus on that. But, you know, in terms of figuring out the evaluation, it's constantly changing. And you see, you know, it used to be we had the era of the huge quarterback with Peyton and Tom and Big Ben. And then the Russell Wilson, thing happens. And then everybody says, okay, well, we can excuse away size. And then you see, you know, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray come in. And so then it's not really size. And then you see the off-platform, off-script style of Patrick Mahomes and really Josh Allen. And teams have tried to copy that. And that hasn't necessarily worked, all the time to perfection there. And then you see last year, Stroud coming into the league almost is a little bit of a throwback from what he did in the pocket and how pristine he was there. That it's constantly changing and people can't necessarily, nail it down on one style. I think it comes down to, does he have the traits in the makeup and all those things? That's the questions there. Different styles, that's not something to get carried away with. To me, it's more a focus of, do we have the right play caller, the right offensive line to protect him, and do we have some guys he can get the ball to? I think that seems to be, what's going to lead to these guys being a success or not, more so than even just how good the player at the quarterback position might be.
Next question comes from Dave Burkett with the Detroit Free Press. Dave, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, always good to hear from you. Look forward to seeing you next week. Just wanted to ask you about a couple of the interior linemen, I guess, who have a chance to go late round one. Barton from Duke, Jackson Powers, Johnson, and Zach Frazier. Can you, maybe compare, contrast them? What do they do well? What do they lack? And do any of those guys jump out as a Dan Campbell, Brad Holmes, Lions type to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's something I've talked to a bunch of teams around the league, is these three guys paired together and teams going through their meetings trying to sort these guys out. Ironically, I would have it Graham Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, then Zach Frazier. And if you ask me who's the lion in the group, I would say the third one. I would say Frazier. I mean, the four-time state champ wrestler, the guy who's just got a tenacity to him and a physicality to and through the whistle. He kind of fits their style, as you know, there. And I think he's worthy of being taken there in the bottom of the first round. I'd have no problem with that at all. But in terms of stylistically, Graham Barton is the best athlete of the three. You know, I think he has legit, you know, five position flexibility. He can move around, do different things, played left tackle. I think he's best at center, but I think he can survive at tackle if you needed him to. I think he's fully capable of playing guard as well, but he's the best in space, change of direction, you know, just overall athleticism. He's really, really talented there. And then Jackson Powers Johnson is, you know, he's just bigger. He's 328 pounds. He's going to be more set a firm pocket. You want to kind of, you know, you want a more of a mauler brawler in the run game. He's not a poor athlete. He's just not the athlete that the other two guys are out in space. But he's a physical, strong, sturdy presence there in the middle who'll set, you'll be able to set a nice deep pocket with him. So I think they're three kind of distinctly different players, but I think all three of them are excellent. And I think all three of them are ready to start right away.
Next question comes from Jim Wyatt with the Tennessee Titans. Jim, you ask your question.
Daniel, appreciate your time as always. Titans picking at 7 in the first, 38 overall in the second. What would you say would be the best case scenario for them based on their needs as far as which players at 7 and 38?
Well, you know, to me, 7, it almost feels like you're in a spot there where the left tackle position is going to force your hand. And I think that's not a bad thing in this draft. I think there's great options there. I mean, it feels like from the very beginning of this process, you know, Joe Alt has been connected to them there at that spot. You know, there's a chance we'll see what happens with the Chargers. What do they do? You know, they could potentially be an offensive line team. I wouldn't even rule out the Giants as maybe a sneaky offensive line team, but I think there's still a good shot that Joe Alt's staring him in the face. And I think that's a home run pick, just safe, secure, solid player who I think he's got some upside as well. So I like the fact you got a high floor and a high ceiling with him. That would be the home run pick for me there at 7. Then when you look at pick 38, you look at a couple different areas they could go, you know, defensive tackle being one, an edge rusher. So if I'm gonna pull up that list and look at guys who, you know, could kind of be in that mix, I would say Darius Robinson would probably factor into that a little bit from Missouri, who could actually do a little bit of both of those things. You know, he was better this last year coming off the edge as opposed to the year before as an interior guy, but I think he gives you some versatility there. So that would be a pretty good line of scrimmage combination there if you went with Alt and then came back with Darius Robinson there at the top of the second round.
Next question comes from John Kime with ESPN. John, you may ask your question.
Thank you. Hey, Daniel, it's Adam Peters' first draft in Washington. We obviously know they have the number two pick, 6 picks in the top 100. How important is this draft in terms of setting up the future for this franchise? How much can they really set this place up?
Well, I think it's huge. And, you know, I think he's got, you know, he's got a massive decision in front of him, starting with his very first pick. So that's a lot of pressure. That's difficult when you are just coming together, you know, with a coach and a general manager, not to mention new owner, new organization, trying to, you know, learn your existing roster. They were very aggressive in free agency in terms of bringing in a lot of guys. So trying to make all these pieces fit. And then, oh, by the way, you know, right away, you've got to make a call on the quarterback position and make sure that you get that right. But I've known Adam for a very long time. I don't know that they could have hired a better person for where they are as a franchise right now, because Adam's a scout at heart. He's a grinder. He's a worker. You know, to have all this draft capital year one, I think it's in good hands with a guy who's got experience of helping to build some great rosters. So I'd be curious to see. You know, I think they stick and pick. I think they take the quarterback at 2. And then I'm curious from then on out, you know, at 36 and 40, I think they, you know, if you're going to play that rookie quarterback, I still think the offensive line has to be addressed. And I'm not loving the fact of sitting at 36 and 40. I think they're a prime candidate to come back up and try and scoop up one of these tackles. Like if you've got Amarius Mims, who's floating around there in the teens, they have plenty of ammunition to be aggressive and go get a starting offensive tackle. So that to me is something I would keep an eye on. I don't see them standing pat and sticking there at 36 and 40. I think that you'll see them try and make a move and address the offensive line.
Next question comes from Nate Davis with USA Today. Nate, you may ask your question.
EJ, thanks for your time and insight as always. You kind of just touched on the crux of my question. And I think you mocked Marvin Harrison to the Jets in one of your recent drafts, but just maybe some teams that aren't necessarily in the quarterback market that you kind of expect might be aggressive trade-wise, and then maybe, you know, again, non-quarterbacks that you think maybe teams might target aggressively.
Yeah, that's interesting just to see who can move. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think that the Jets are going to be that, you know, that bold to go up there and make that move. That was my, I think I used the word chaos, and I was going for chaos to have some fun. Maybe that's the problem with mocks, is you get to one point in time, there's some boredom that sets in and you want to shake up the snow globe a little bit. In terms of, you know, one thing I would say on the Jets though, the one thing about them moving, talking about them, and then we'll get on to these other teams. If Odunze is kind of a, you know, we've been talking about him potentially being in Chicago. Like if he gets to 8, I could make a very strong argument that the Jets could make an easy, painless flip with Atlanta, where Atlanta goes back to 10. They could leapfrog Chicago and take Odunze. And that wouldn't cost them much. You literally give them your 3, they give you a 4. You can, you know, have some other picks involved there, but you wouldn't necessarily lose a pick. You could swap a pick. But in terms of other teams, you know, to be aggressive, I mentioned Washington, bottom of top of the second round, being a team that could jump back up and make a move. I never sleep on Howie Roseman as a potential to go north or south. I always keep an eye on them. I think they have a pretty obvious need there at corner. You have somebody like Terrion Arnold. Or even Mitchell, if Quinyon Mitchell, if either of those guys start to drift a little bit, I wouldn't sleep at all on the Eagles, you know, being an aggressive team to go up there and try and get one of those corners. You know, other teams to, you know, to be a team to keep an eye on, to move around a little bit. I mean, those are kind of the key ones. The other one I would say is the Saints have historically in their DNA been an aggressive team. You know, they're in a position where they have a dire need at tackle. I think they could stay where they are at 14 and get a really good one. But, you know, they're always a candidate to move up and try and get the guy that they really love.
Next question comes from Ryan Dunleavy with the New York Post. Ryan, you may ask your question.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks for doing this. Kind of a trend I've noticed lately with fans is that no one really appreciates a consistently good team anymore. It's mm-hmm. like if you don't have a QB who can win the Super Bowl, you have to go try to get one, and you're trying to accelerate the process and skip the steps. So I'm wondering, when it seems like teams like the Giants, the Commanders, the Broncos, who haven't been good often in the last decade, should they worry about getting to the level of like the Steelers, the Cowboys, the Seahawks in terms of consistently good? I'm wondering why you think that is, if there's like a CJ Stroud element to we can go from bad to a contender really quickly. And do you think teams should, you know, like I said, consistently be thinking about the Super Bowl behind the scenes, or is there a subset of teams that need to build up their roster and then worry about the Super Bowl quarterback?
Well, I think there's obviously the two, you know, schools of thought, right? You get the, you know, you build up the entire roster, then you drop the quarterback in the mix, and then you're good to go. And the other part of it is, if you have a chance to, you know, if you have a chance to get what you believe is a premier quarterback, even if the rest of your team isn't in place, you know, you're going to have the pressure to go ahead and make that move. So I think there is definitely something to the superstar quarterback era that we're in right now, particularly in the AFC, where it's just hard, you know, when you're in draft meetings and you're looking at it going like, these are the quarterbacks we have to run through. Like, we can build the most, you know, the talented team and a balanced team. But at the end of the day, those big games, and especially if we were to get into the tournament, are going to come down to can our quarterback compete with their quarterback and make the throws you have to make to go, you know, to go win something. So I think that's kind of the pressure on these teams, is we don't have one of those guys. We're always in search of trying to find one. And I think the consistent playoff teams have, you know, consistent quarterback play. So it's just there's about every, I looked it up a while ago, it feels like there's, you know, maybe two teams a decade where they don't have a premier quarterback, but they have a loaded roster and everything goes perfect for them, and they can go, you know, win a Super Bowl. the rest of those Super Bowls seem to be won by, you know, superstar quarterbacks, you know, Mahomes being the one at the front of the line right now.
Next question comes from D. Orlando Ledbetter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. D, you may ask your question.
With the Falcons, looking at the edge rushers up high, is Lotus' medical issue a factor there? And is he better than Turner if he didn't have the medical issue? Just trying to balance that out there.
Yeah, I know there's teams that have him that have Latu as the number one edge guy. So I don't think that's unanimous with Dallas Turner. I have Dallas Turner, then Verse, then Latu. I know there's talking to teams, there's varying degrees of concern with Latu's medical. You know, you're medically retired, you have a fusion that's concerning to teams, for rightfully so. But then on the other side of it, he's played well and been healthy the last 2 years and been really productive at UCLA. So other teams aren't as concerned with it. But to answer your question, I wouldn't just put it in ink that Dallas Turner is the pick there with the Atlanta Falcons. I think, I would not rule out, any of those other top guys there on the defensive line. And one of the things that's been kicked around, I've said this on TV the other day, but the name that, if you ask me who the surprise top 10 pick is, or who is somebody that we just didn't see coming, to me, that's Byron Murphy, as a defensive tackle from Texas. It's a league that's placed in ever more premium on defensive tackles. I was talking to a general manager this morning, and I just said, when you look around the league and we ask, who are the true impact dominant defensive tackles, maybe seven or eight of them. Edge rushers, it goes a lot deeper than that. And when you look at the draft, to me, there's some other interesting names you could go after outside the first round at the edge rusher position. It falls off pretty quick at defensive tackle. So even though everybody's kind of looking and the sack issues they've had and them needing an edge rusher, I wouldn't just totally rule out Murphy there as somebody that they could be at least interested in.
Next question comes from Bob McMiniman with the Arizona Republic. Bob, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, thank you again for this. Question is, you had a tweet the other day about the Cardinals and how they can set themselves up for the next 5 to 7 years. And I guess it's because Monty Austin Fork really has a whole field of play here with 11 picks, 6 in the top 90, 7 in the top 104. What kind of strategy do you think he's going to play here with so much draft capital? And a lot of needs, but to go back to that tweet, how do you intertwine what you said with what he has in front of him to deal with?
Yeah, I can't wait to see what he does. I think there's some things you want to get accomplished here. Number one, you still need blue chip players. Like, you can't always, trade back and just keep getting more and more and more picks. Eventually, you got to add more. They need blue chip talent players here. So I think there's a way where they can get creative. I think there's a way where they can serve all these masters. In other words, they get, some impact players. They can still move around the board a little bit. Hopefully, continue to add picks into the future. Keep that alive. I love it when you've got all this capital. Hey, let's not spend it all this year. Let's try and keep accumulating things for next year. I think they're in a prime position to be able to get out at 4 if they want to and come back up and still get, one of those top 3 receivers. So, if they think those guys are close and who knows what order they have them in, I think that order changes around the league. I think they can get one of those guys, which is a top 5 player, while also collecting a little something extra. And it's a way for them to add impact guys at positions of need while also, continuing to add some more firepower here. But yeah, this is a set your franchise up situation here for the Arizona Cardinals. The Houston Texans did it last year. If you go back and look at a lot of the Super Bowl teams, you can identify the 1 or 2 year period where their draft set that run up. Seattle's one that comes right to mind, what they did over a couple of years. I remember, back when I was in Baltimore in the early 2000s, the Chargers had gone on a good run, and we had talked about it in our meeting room that they had literally back-to-back drafts, just 2 drafts where they hit on about 5 guys each, and it set them up to be a really competitive team for a decade. So this is their moment here. So they need to, they need to get some guys who really make a difference for them.
Next question comes from Chase Goodbread in Tuscaloosa. Chase, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, good to see you. Wanted to ask you about, you know, you hear a lot of comparisons around here about Dallas Turner and Will Anderson, being that they were college teammates for a couple of years. It was pretty obvious that Anderson had a little more power as a bull rusher, but mm-hmm. can you just touch on that difference and any other differences or similarities you see between them?
Yeah, I first of all, great to hear your voice, buddy. That's I saw a little bit of the A-Day game the other day. That was the scene. The thing with these two guys, they are, I don't want to say polar opposite, but they are not similar at all. Dallas has got a little more juice in terms of his get off, and his burst is pretty elite. He's a better bender. He's just a more fluid, loose athlete than Will. Will is just, he's got a lot more horsepower. Not just, you know, with the bull rush playing through blocks. He's a little more knockback at the point of attack against the run. Whereas, you know, Turner's a little more use your length and just kind of set the edge. There's some people around the league that aren't as high on Turner, you know, in terms of him being the top guy in this draft. And they've used the words, you know, they thought, oh, he's kind of soft. He's not tough. He's not physical. And I'm like, nah, I don't agree with that at all. I think there's a difference between being a violent player, like a Jared versus a real violent, you know, angry physical player. While as I think with Turner, he's more of a firm player. Like he's still doing a good job. He's not getting blown back. He's holding the point of attack. He's just not going to get a ton of knockback, you know, from that standpoint. So I think he gets a little unfairly criticized with that. I think he's a special player, you know, with his combination of length and bend and athleticism. I think he plays hard. I think he's a really good player. But yeah, stylistically, very, very different than what you had last year with Will Anderson.
Next question comes from Andrew Mason. Andrew, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, good to see you again. You mentioned earlier the Saints have a history of trading up, and of course, now Sean Payton's in Denver, and meanwhile, George Payton, he's spoken of the more darts philosophy, trading down to get more picks. So at number 12, and with this QB need the Broncos have, what's the best play for them, up, down, or stand pat?
I mean, I think the best play is to try and move down. You know, unless I would say if they, you know, if we have a situation where if Minnesota makes a move for Drake May, right? So let's say somehow New England they want to just get the haul and they want to get out of there at three. And the trade up for Minnesota actually ends up being Drake May and not J.J. McCarthy. I don't know who the other J.J. McCarthy team is. So I think at that point, if you're Denver and you're staying there at 12 and, you know, and you hear reports that they like him, then you stick and pick and you get the fourth quarterback right there at 12. Cause I don't think there's another McCarthy team if it's not the Vikings. Outside of that, let's say, you know, McCarthy's gone and you're staring there at, you know, Bo Nix seems to be one that's popular there. Obviously Penix would still be on the board. If you want to take a quarterback, I think at that point in time, you could probably afford to move back a little bit and just see whatever else you could accumulate and then make that pick. The challenge is going to be, I don't know who at that point in time is coming up, unless it's somebody that's coming up to position themselves, you know, to get a tackle, assuming that the Raiders could be a tackle team and the Saints right there are a tackle team. So maybe you get somebody, you know, I'm looking down through, maybe you know, if the Bengals wanted to jump up there for a tackle, maybe you get the Rams who wanted to move up there for a tackle, but I think they could be in a position where they might not be able to get out. So that might be what they want to do. I just don't know if they're going to be able to find a partner there.
Next question comes from Scott Abraham in Washington. Scott, you may ask your question.
DJ, appreciate you doing this. Obviously the great debate here in Washington, Drake May or Jaden Daniels. And as we speak right now, they're hosting four quarterbacks at the same time at their team headquarters. I guess, first of all, what do you think that means that they're hosting all those four quarterbacks at the same time? And ultimately, what's their decision going to be at number two, you think?
Look, I talked to Adam the other day about having those guys in there. And, you know, it's just they've done it in San Francisco and there's value there. He didn't mention this, but I you know, from other teams, been around other teams, that a lot of times that can be, you know, as a way to cater to the owner. You know, the owner is not necessarily going to be in town in the building on a, you know, day-to-day basis. So it's a way to be efficient to bring all these guys in there, get a chance to meet with the owner. He can be around them and get a feel for them. So I think that's some of the philosophy behind bringing those guys in together. In terms of what they're going to do, I honestly, I've known Adam forever. He's never going to say a word. I don't think that's going to get out. I think all of us are going to find out who they're picking once they, you know, once they get on the clock and turn the card in there in Detroit. I've, you know, I've been connecting them to Drake May for a long time. I just felt like that fit there. I think about, you know, DQ going to a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. And I think about, you know, what Matt Ryan was coming out, strengths, weaknesses. And I thought it actually married up pretty well with Drake. So that who had been my connection there. But in talking to, you know, coaches and executives around the league, they're like overwhelmingly convinced around the league that this is Jaden Daniels, that he's going to be the pick there at number two. And it would, you know, I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I like all these three quarterbacks. So that seems to be the expectation from folks around the league. But again, I think anybody that says they know exactly what Washington's doing is lying, because I don't think Adam's saying a word. All right, let's pause. Let's take a quick little break. We'll come back. We'll finish up this conference call right after this.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft.
That's right. We will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and surprises.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year.
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next question comes from Omar Navarro with Chargers. Omar, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, thank you for doing this. Obviously, this will be Jim Harbaugh's first draft with the Chargers. How do you think he puts his stamp on the roster in round one?
Well, I think in an ideal world, I think they'd like to get out of there, trade back and get extra picks and kind of build out as many players that kind of fit his vision for the team. So to me, I think, you know, this makes sense to be kind of a volume draft for them. Come away with some extra picks, continue to, you know, add guys that fit their, you know, new physical philosophy of how they want to play the game. So there's been a lot of debate. Do they take a receiver? Do they take an offensive lineman? What do they do there at five? I think the overwhelming preference would be that they don't pick at five, that they get out of there. They find somebody that wants to come up, and then they can continue to fill out the needs on this team. Because while, you know, we've been focused so much on that side of the ball, like, they could use a big time defensive tackle. They could absolutely use another corner. At some point in time, they're going to need to add a linebacker, an off the ball linebacker. So they've got a lot of things they need to get accomplished here. So for him to put his stamp on it, to me, I think it would be more about, you know, just the volume of the players that they bring in that kind of fit what he wants to do. And that's going to, you know, go long after the first round's over. I think they'll do that throughout the draft.
Next question comes from Adam Beasley. Adam, you may ask your question.
We had a chance to chat with Greer yesterday, and it's not as simple as we're taking the best available with the six offensive tackles. He was very clear that the fit had to be right. Of those top six, which are the ones do you think fit best with the Dolphins?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, I mean, when you look at guys, to me, you want guys that can move around a little bit and guys that can protect. So if I'm looking at, you know, where the Miami Dolphins are picking there at 21, Alt's gone. I think Fuaga's gone. I think Fashanu's gone. I think there's a chance that Latham could be there. I think Latham would fit them. I think Fa'atanu would be a great fit. I mean, I don't think he'll be there. He's my 11th player. But, you know, look, these guys have him in different orders. But that to me, the two that I would feel great about is somehow Fa'atanu got there, or if it was Latham in terms of being ready to go right away. Amarius Mims has the freaky upside. But with this Dolphins team, it feels like, man, they're ready to go right now. And I think the presence of somebody like Latham is just a little bit more prepared to step in right now and go.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Next question comes from Mark Maskey. Mark, you may ask your question.
The new kickoff rule that was approved last month, do you see that showing up at all, and to what extent, and especially with, you know, maybe guys who teams might project as returners, even if they didn't do it much in college? You think any of those guys will get pushed up a little bit, or maybe even some day three guys get drafted that wouldn't have otherwise have gotten picked?
I was talking to a GM the other day, and he was going through the process of pulling returns on guys from like their freshman year, like this stuff that we used to do a lot of in scouting that you really haven't had to do over the last few years as the return game has kind of diminished. But now they're like, okay, well, we're close on these two corners. Well, this one actually was a kickoff returner 2-3 years ago. They're going back and watching all those returns because now that has some a little bonus to it, a little added value. So I think it impacts the draft. Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially this year, not knowing, I think there's teams and decision makers that want to be ahead of the curve a little bit and view that as, that could be a difference making play again and something that we haven't seen in terms of how this is set up. So, yeah, I think I'm fascinated to see it. And I think it's going to help separate a lot of ties between players. And it's also going to be an easy sell for college teams now, with some of these, premier young players that they have, to convince them that, hey, you can add to your value by being a returner for us. So I think that'll be fun as well.
Next question comes from Rich Cimini with ESPN. Rich, you may ask your question.
Great. Thanks so much, DJ. I want to pose a Jets scenario for you. Okay. If the top three receivers are gone, which is likely, and Joe Alt is gone, so then the Jets are probably looking at Bowers or the next best offensive tackle. What do you think Joe Douglas would do in that scenario? And if he goes tackle, who do you think might be the preference after Joe Alt?
Yeah, I mean, my guess on the tackle front would be Fuaga. I think it would be Fuaga or Fa'atanu, one of those two guys. I would guess, Fuaga. But I think both those guys have some position flexibility, which, when he's been healthy, I think has been big with guys like Vera Tucker, to be able to get your best five out there. So I think there's a bonus there with having those two guys. But I, to be honest, and I haven't talked to Joe, but that would be, if you're going to ask that decision, my gut tells me I think they would take Bowers. I think he comes from an organization and all the time in Baltimore where they had great tight ends and they've always done a good job of drafting tight ends. But I think that's they've got, I like their tight end room now. Conklin's a solid player, but this would give them a little something different there that they don't have. So that would be, if it came down to that between the tight end and with Alt off the board, I would guess Bowers, and then I would put Fuaga and Fa'atanu right behind that.
Next question comes from Stu Jackson with the Rams. Stu, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, thanks for doing this. So Wes Snead, he's left all options on the table as far as sticking and picking, maybe trading up, maybe trading back. The Rams are still, I believe, tied with a couple other teams for the most selections entering the draft. So looking at 19th overall, what are the scenarios that you potentially see where, whether it's addressing offense or defense, they move up or they stay put or they trade back?
Yeah, I mean, they already have a ton of resources. I talked earlier about a team like Washington potentially coming up for one of those tackles. That was one of the spots I thought, okay, that would be the most less move ever, is that they finally have a first round pick after all these years. And right when they go on the clock, they announce that they've traded out to get it, you know, some assets here in the second round. And how, you know, I wouldn't rule it out again for something like that to happen, where he has a zillion day two picks in rounds two and three, and just continues to attack it that way. I think you can make an argument that might be the smartest course of action there. They have the ammunition if they want to move up. I would think if a guy like Byron Murphy, knowing who just left the building, if Byron Murphy, you know, started to drift a little bit, I would think that would be an obvious one for them to target to go up, as well as if, you know, one of those three edge rushers, if they have a preference on those guys, you know, I wouldn't sleep on that as well. But in talking to teams around the league over the last week, I think it's a lot closer with Chop Robinson with those top three guys than maybe some people expect. So I have it. I had Turner 12 on my list. Verse was 14. Latu was 16. Robinson was 21. And there's a lot of people out there that think that Chop Robinson could end up being like the second edge rusher to go. So if those, you know, there's those four guys, I think there's a decent chance one of those four guys is just going to be right there for him at 19, and that would not be a bad way to go.
Next question comes from Bill Bender. Bill, you may ask your question.
Hey, thank you for doing this as always. You know, with JJ McCarthy, I'm sure you've been asked every question, but, you know, it's kind of a two-part. Like, this notion that he might do more in the NFL because he was asked to do less at Michigan, how true is that? And, you know, how viable is it that, I know you kind of answered this question, but how viable do you see the possibility of him actually going in the top five?
Yeah, I mean, two different questions, right? I mean, the best way I heard this explained to me, and I'm like, I love the way it was said, which was, you know, like somebody was watching tape with McCarthy, and they got to watching a drive, and they got into the red zone, and he said, well, you can kind of fast forward it from here. And he's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, this is just Michigan football from here on in. Like, we're just gonna run the ball. Like, that's gonna work, and they're gonna get their way in the end zone. And Jim Harbaugh wasn't gonna, you know, why throw it if you don't have to throw it? And they didn't. And then he said, look, we worked on red zone passing, you know, every day in practice and put in all the work, and I've got all that experience. But he said, they didn't need it, except in a few games, including in the Alabama game when he played well. So that's why it's a difficult evaluation, because you can see him do everything you want him to do or that you need a big time quarterback to do. It's just the numbers in terms of the volume is not there. So you've got somebody that, if you look at him from a size standpoint, I think he's put on like 15 pounds in the last year. I think he's still growing into his body. He's going to be a bigger guy. Everybody that was at the pro days, you know, that I talked to said he threw it as well or better than any of the top quarterbacks. He's got a live, you know, big time live arm. So you've got enough size, a guy who's still growing. He's got a big arm. He's incredibly smart. Like, there's things you can latch onto there. You're just going to have some faith, and some do and some don't on what you're buying there. But in terms of him going, you know, the Vikings are the team that's connected to him. And then you have the Denver Broncos. And so is that enough to, you know, to warrant a move all the way up there, or do those teams try and be patient and see how it falls? That I don't know. I'll put it this way. I feel like if you told me that JJ McCarthy goes beyond the 12th pick, I'd be shocked. And then outside of that, everything's on the table. Whether or not that's a trade up to 4, 5, you know, whether that's just trade up just a couple spots, or whether those teams stand pat, I think all those options are in play.
Next question comes from Dane Mizutani with the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Dane, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ. This works out well because I cover the Vikings. But when you look at the situation in place in Minnesota, and you kind of take that into account, how does that set up for if they do take a rookie quarterback compared to other situations and other teams that might be looking to take the same type of player?
I would say if you gave truth serum to the quarterbacks and the agents of all the top guys, every single one of them would say they would love nothing more than to go to the Minnesota Vikings. That would be the number one choice. Of all these teams that are quarterback teams, and we've run through all of them on this call, that is by far the best landing spot for any quarterback to go into. I mean, it's all set up, you know, from the things that we talk about with the three P's, with the play caller, the protection, the playmakers, check, check, check. Hey, you know, maybe we don't want to rush right onto the field. We want to be able to sit and learn for a little bit. Well, we've got Sam Darnold who can get us through games. He can get us through the whole season if we needed him to, but at least get us through some games and get you comfortable before you're ready to go out there. I can't think of a better situation for a young quarterback than the one that the Minnesota Vikings have. That's why, you know, to me, I think it's kind of foolish to look back and see, oh, you know, these teams or these people had these quarterbacks ranked wrong. And it's like, well, if you tell me where all they're going to go, it might inform how you would rate the players a little bit. I'd feel pretty confident who, you know, Minnesota's got a good chance of getting some good production out of a quarterback that they take.
Next question comes from Jimmy Kemsky. Jimmy, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ. Offensive tackle question that's kind of coming from an Eagles perspective. They look for offensive linemen that have at least one really unique physical trait, typically. And then hopefully they have good football character as well. And then they let Jeff Stoutland work. Yeah. I'm curious which of the offensive tackles in this class you think have one exceptionally unique trait compared to the other top tackles in the class.
Wow. If you were asking me like who the Stoutland guys are in this draft, I mean, Fuaga would be way up there. I don't think that he's going to be in their mix. So if we're looking at the reasonable guys that they could have a shot at, Latham, Mims, and Guyton. And I think all three of those guys have exceptional physical traits. They're all enormous and long, and by all accounts are coachable. So, you could try and split hairs there, but I think all three of those guys, they're 18, 22, and 23 on my list. And I think all three of those guys would be Jeff Stoutland, you know, approved in terms of the ability that they have. I think Latham's a little bit further along in the progression than Mims and Guyton. I think any of those three guys are there. I would think Stout would absolutely get the best out of them.
Thanks.
Yep.
Next question comes from Jory Epstein with Yahoo Sports. Jory, let me ask your question.
Thanks so much for doing this, DJ. We talk a lot about how quarterback valuation has changed over the years. And one way I keep hearing from coaches and execs is teams' willingness to adapt to quarterbacks coming out versus looking for one cookie cutter style. How do you think that willingness to adapt to quarterbacks will influence the top quarterback prospects? Or put another way, how differently would the top 3 to 5 quarterbacks draft class look now versus 20 years ago because of that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that sometimes we get carried away with how does this guy, walk in and fit the current offense that exists versus how do we, you know, build around the most talented player. And I don't think you want to bypass talent too often, and especially at that position. So how do you cater towards them? I think that's been going on for probably a while now, though. You know, you say like maybe 20 years ago it would have been different, but I would say, you know, I think probably over 10 years now where you've seen teams be a little bit more flexible in terms of incorporating what these guys do well in the college game. And that's why we've seen the RPO stuff make its way up to the league and mirroring a little bit more of the college game than what it was previously. I also think one of the huge changes in quarterback evaluation and play is just having the, you know, when you have the voice in your ear, when you have the coach in your ear with the helmets, I think that's made that a lot easier to be able to communicate down in, down out with these guys, what needs to be communicated other than just a play call. It's made that transition easier. So I think that stuff over the last 20 years that you've seen that have eased the transition and trying to meet them more where they are instead of trying to turn all these guys into, you know, 6'5", 230-pound, you know, pure pocket quarterbacks. It's been that way for a while.
Next question comes from John McMullen. John, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, kind of a follow-up to your Eagles conversation just there with the tackles and Stout. you know, with Lane Johnson still playing at a high level, Jordan Mailata just got $66 million. You know, they prefer to get somebody who could start at guard and kick out. So of any of those guys you mentioned, better equipped to start inside than the others?
Yeah, of those three that I'd said, I mean, I would say Latham, you know, between Latham, Mims, and Guyton, that's a lot of man inside. I mean, all those guys are big, but you're talking about almost 6'8" with Mims and Guyton, where you're, it's, you know, almost 6'6" with Latham. So to me, Latham would be the one that could kick in, but the two that could really do it are Fuaga and Fa'atanu. Those guys absolutely plug and play at guard and then can graduate to tackle whenever Lane walked away. But I think you probably have to move up a little bit to get that done again. Howie's been, you know, Howie's been more than willing to do that over the years too. He'll move either way. So I wouldn't rule that out. If one of those two guys started to drift, that's an easy, you know, plug and play guard for sure.
Next question comes from Nick Walters with ABC Las Vegas. Nick, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, thanks for the time. There's a lot of chatter in Las Vegas and in Raider Nation about the quarterback position, but they might not have the ammunition like the Vikings to move up for Jaden Daniels. Right now, you actually had Michael Penix Jr. mocked to the Raiders in your most recent mock draft at 13. That might be like Penix's ceiling right there, but you say that he fits the Raiders' style of play. How does he fit that Raiders style of play under Luke Getsy? And if they decide to stay pat at quarterback, what non-quarterback options do you see there at right tackle and cornerback?
Yeah, look, to me, sometimes you just simplify it and I'm like, okay, you know, we can argue, well, you have him, where do you have him? Is he your 15th player, 20th player, or 34th player? Sometimes you can simplify it with two things. Number one, the quarterback is the most important position on the team. And is there an option where we're picking that's better than what we're playing with? And that's why I came, you know, with the Penix thing. And Penix is he's my 34th player, I think, as of my last update. So 13, gosh, that feels like it's a little rich. But I'm like, I don't know. If you told me that I've got to move forward and I've got Gardner Minshew, who I think is a quality two, who can get you out of a game or two, but I don't think is a starter. You know, I don't think you want him as your starter for the long term. And Aiden O'Connell, who's shown some good things. But to me, there's just a huge talent gap there. I think Penix has so much more ability. So that's why I've made that spot there for him. And obviously, in an ideal world, you'd trade back, get some extra picks, and nobody else takes him, and you get him and a little bonus there. But in terms of the other positions, you nailed it. I mean, corner and tackle, I think they'd have really good options there. I would love, you know, Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those kids. Would be home run picks there. And then I think from a tackle perspective, that to me is like right around the sweet spot where you've got Fuaga, Fa'atanu, and Fashanu, the three Fs there. I think there's three guys that immediately upgrade your offensive line. And I don't know that there's a wrong pick there. I gave all three of the guys the same grade. They're 10th, 11th, and 15th on my list. So that's the decision that it's going to come down to. Do they feel like that's a big upgrade at the quarterback position, you know, whoever that might be? Or do you address one of those other two big needs with guys that are, you know, ready to go? I think high floor players that you're not going to miss on for Antonio Pierce to get this team going.
Thank you.
Yep.
Next question comes from Ryan McFadden. Ryan, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, thanks for doing this. My question, I have a scenario for you. So if Brock Bowers is available at 12 for the Broncos to choose, to select, do you think the Broncos should just go on and select them or try to address a more pressing need on teams such as edge rusher, corner, or even offensive tackle?
You know, look, that's kind of the crux of drafting, right? Do you take the need or do you take the best player available? I've always, you know, I always go back to the, you know, the best player available, unless we're talking about the quarterback position. Quarterback position, you might be willing to, you know, to adjust things a little bit because obviously of the importance there. But I would have a higher grade on Bowers at that point in time. I know they've got other tight ends and they're, you know, it's not like that's a dire need for them, but I think that's a premier player. And I think, you know, whatever they're going to do quarterback wise, if it's Jarrett Stidham for another year, they go out and bring in a veteran. I don't think that's a bad option. If I was going to look at Bowers versus some of these other positional players, I think I might be one who actually leans towards best player available, and I'd take Bowers.
Next question comes from Bradley Locker. Bradley, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, I know you talked about Keon Coleman as maybe a guy who could sneak into that first round. Are there other names you're kind of monitoring as one of those unsuspecting guys who maybe could be taken in the top 32?
Yeah, I mean, Leggett's mentioned a little bit, talking to people around the league. I think Xavier Leggett, there's a chance he goes late one. I would still say I think he's going to go in the second round. But that's one it's in the mix there. I know there's a lot of love for McConkey and Pearsall. There's definitely some Xavier Worthy teams. I think all those guys are, you know, kind of mentioned there. I just know there's been years past where you know, I go back to like the DK Metcalf draft. You know, him, you've got AJ Brown. It seems like every year there's a couple of these guys that we have pegged as lock first rounders at the wideout position that teams just feel like because of the volume of wideouts, they can address some other needs and get one later. That I think we're more likely to see wideouts we believe are going in one, they're going to slide to two, than guys we believe are second rounders that are going to climb up into the first.
Jay Morrison, you may ask your question.
Daniel, thanks for doing this. I'm curious how far you think Tavondre Sweat falls with the DUI, and what type of organization would be the best fit for that kind of red flag, whether it's a no-nonsense head coach, a veteran locker room, or a city with a less than thriving nightlife?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think it's going to be different around the league. I think that answer to that question has to do with, you know, whether people agree with it or not, is how good of a football player do you think he is? And I didn't know many teams that were as high on him as a player. So I mean, he wasn't in my top 50. And then, you know, it's kind of, and it was explained away, but you know, you go to the Senior Bowl, you don't weigh in. He's, you know, he's 366 pounds. And then now this thing happens, you know, with the DWI a couple weeks out from the draft, which is just it's terrible judgment and it's, you know, immaturity in there as well. So look, if you thought he was a great player and you get a chance to, you'd be spending a lot of time with him on Zoom right now with different members of your organization, from coaches and personnel staff and, you know, security folks, you name it, like you're going to be doing all kinds of homework to try and get comfortable with him. If you like him, if you didn't like him, I think he's going to get pushed so far down. I would guess when it's all said and done, you know, I think there's a chance, I think as high as he'd go, I'd be shocked if he went in the second round. To me, the third round would be the earliest I could see him going. And I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't go on day two and ended up going somewhere on day number three.
Next question comes from Q Myers. Q, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, going back to the Michael Penix conversation with the Raiders at 13, is the risk worth the reward for the Raiders to go and grab a guy like Fuaga or the best offensive tackle to fill that right void on the offensive line and then try to double down and get Penix maybe at the back end of round one if he's still available?
I think that's a you know, a very reasonable and thoughtful strategy. You know, I think if you came out of this, if you asked me what is the home run draft for the Raiders and you told me that they got Fuaga with the 13th pick and they came back into the bottom of the first round and they got Michael Penix, I'll be on the set in Detroit, you know, tipping my cap to Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce, because I think that's everything's gone perfect type draft for me. I think that gives you the hope of the future with Penix, and it addresses a huge, huge need and would actually give Penix a, you know, better opportunity at success, or whoever's playing quarterback for that matter, by nailing that. So no, I think that's a, yeah, there's some, if you love Penix, there's some risk involved there that maybe somebody else takes him. Man, if you pull it off and it works, I think that's a heck of a strategy.
Next question comes from Parker Gabriel. Parker, you may ask your question.
Hey, DJ, maybe just framing the Broncos and the quarterback conversation slightly differently. How do you sort of evaluate, you know, where they're at in terms of, you know, roster wise and with Sean Payton, in terms of like, is it a good time for them to have a young quarterback on the roster? I mean, Sean's never actually really had a young guy that he's relied on. Obviously had Drew Brees for a long time, but sort of in the spirit of the Vikings question, you know, where are the Broncos in terms of, you know, an attractive option for a young quarterback?
It's not the Vikings, I think it's set up to be functional. You look at having the offensive mind slash play caller there, with Sean and Lombardi have been together forever. Those guys know what they're doing. So you've got that taken care of. I think the offensive line's in decent shape. So you start there. They don't have premier weapons, but they've got some interesting guys. I like what Mims did last year. They still got those veterans out there. So I think it's set up to be, sustainable. You're not going to ruin the quarterback by throwing him out there with that group right now. That's the line for me. Like, it's not ideally, you like to have the Minnesota Vikings and we've got everything in place and we're going to go off and running. You know, Houston Texans, we've got, maybe the best left tackle in the NFL and we've got a collection of good weapons, all that. Like, that's great. But to me, it's like, let's not be in a situation where we're throwing him out there and he's got no chance. And I don't think that's the case in Denver. I think you get out there, you get a chance for your quarterback to be functional for sure.
Next question comes from Joe Donahue. Joe, you may ask your question.
DJ, thanks so much again for taking the time here. With what do you think position-wise the Eagles would benefit most from with their late round picks? And in terms of adding value for the long run, and which players do you think might the Eagles target with some of their day three picks?
Yeah, I mean, look, day three is usually, you start with guys that can help contribute on special teams, while they're developing and growing. You look at corners and you look at off the ball linebackers. Those would be the places I would start. So when you start talking about day three guys, corners, guys like Josh Newton from TCU. Jarvis Brownlee from Louisville. Those are a couple off top here that I really like. I love Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. I think he's going to end up going on day two. He's a really, really good player. But those are some of the names at the corner position. Then linebackers, day three linebackers that can help you immediately on special teams and then continue to grow and develop. I like Olufashio from Washington. I like Bertrand from Notre Dame. Amusau from UCLA. Those are some guys, that to me are day three players that not only can help you on teams right away, but they're guys that I think have the potential to be solid starters in time. All right, well, there you have it. Hope you guys enjoyed that again. I always enjoy the chance to interact with the media as we head towards the draft in Detroit. So much excitement, so much buzz around this particular draft for all the reasons that you just heard during that conference call. So hope you enjoyed it. Buck will be back. We will have an episode with Mina Kimes. Our good friend Mina Kimes is going to join us for a little bonus episode this week. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, we appreciate you. Appreciate all your support. Appreciate those ratings and reviews. Keep those coming. And we'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.